Good morning and welcome to Conti's Law. I'm your host, Attorney Michelle Conti, your estate planning and tax legal concierge. I hope you're doing well this morning. Since our last show, we've received several questions regarding our next topic. I know that in the past weeks, we've made mention of the importance of planning and the pitfalls that may befall you if you don't have the proper plan and become incapacitated or pass away. Today, we're going to talk about the importance of planning for those loved ones who have special needs. And what I mean by special needs is those people who may be collecting or in the future capable of collecting some form of governmental benefit. And that could be Social Security income, medical assistance, some form of federal or state mental health or intellectual disability benefits. And the reason being, and I have these conversations with parents and siblings, kids, we want to make sure that their benefits are not jeopardized by failure to structure that inheritance or structure a personal injury settlement, even a divorce distribution. We want to make sure that these benefits that they're receiving aren't affected. Let's say, and I work with several of the local prominent personal injury law firms here, and we talk about the importance of planning. If you have a claimant who is going to receive a personal injury settlement, and you're collecting benefits, if you receive that award outright and free of trust, you will not preserve your eligibility for governmental benefits after you recover those damages. And people are shocked when I talk about that. The way to preserve your benefits, and there's a whole host of things that go into this, but let's talk in general terms. I collect a benefit. I'm going to receive a $50,000 settlement. $50,000 is greater than the amount of assets I'm allowed to have to qualify for these benefits. What do? Turn down the settlement? Absolutely not. Lose my benefits? That's even worse. What we can do is use a form of a special needs trust. There are two. We can have of the self-funded trusts. So there's a self-funded payback and a self-funded pooled. Essentially, they're one and the same. It's very complicated. I don't want to go through all of the distinctions, but if you have a self-funded trust, what that means in a nutshell is that you, as the party receiving benefits, are entitled to this money. This is your money no matter what. The difference is a third party special needs trust, which means that money is not yours. It's coming from a third party. So if I'm leaving or creating a third party trust for my child, it is what it is. It's an inheritance. It means it's theirs, but it's actually my money going to them. Whereas the self-funded trust means it's that beneficiary's money. So when we have this personal injury settlement, in my example, we want to ensure that that beneficiary, that that person who receives the benefits from the government, gets the best of both worlds. And so we will create this self-funded first-party trust. Now, if it's a payback trust, that means Those monies will be segregated, used for that person during their lifetime. Upon their passing, however, the state of Pennsylvania or any state that has provided them with benefits during their lifetime will be paid back, either in full or a portion of what they've paid on that beneficiary's life, throughout their life. There's also what's called a pooled special needs trust. That's essentially the same trust, but with a pooled special needs trust company. And in Pittsburgh, we have a few of them. I work with one in particular. I like them. They're very good at what they do. They're a national trust company. So if you move to a different state, they still have the ability to assist you. But let's talk about, and if you have questions, feel free. Give us a call, 724-784-0239. Or hop onto our website, and we have material on there for you. www.contilawpgh.com. So any educational or resource we can provide for you, in my opinion, that's all the better, because this can get complicated. And we want to make sure you don't jeopardize benefits if you don't have to. So the question I received an email from a lady by the name of Polly, and we had an exchange back and forth about this special needs planning. And one of her questions was, when should a special needs trust be considered in a litigation matter? My answer was what I just said. If that person, if your loved one, is receiving public benefits, so it could be medical assistance, supplemental security income, SSI, then they need to consider it, because any money from any source in their name that's more than $2,000 would disqualify them or could disqualify them from benefits. That money can come from an inheritance if that person who died didn't structure the inheritance in the appropriate and correct way. It can come from a personal injury settlement. It can even come from an award of past benefits for SSI. So there's different types of special needs trusts that exist for each scenario. And we'll get into the appropriate way to leave an inheritance to a loved one who has special needs, who's collecting these benefits. We can quite easily create a third-party supplemental special needs trust, which allows them to continue to receive their benefits and receive the inheritance without having to pay back the state of Pennsylvania or any governmental benefit that they've received throughout their life. So Polly and I, throughout this conversation, went back and forth, and one of the questions that I think most people don't ask that they should is, what is the least amount of the inheritance or the recovery that a trust should be considered? And the answer is only in very extreme conditions. So only if that recovery is so small that there's no reason to fail to consider the trust to protect the assets. That's it. So if your recovery is essentially under $2,000, then okay, you don't need a trust. So if it's any more than that, then you need the special needs trust. And that's when we would sit down and go through the requirements Pennsylvania has. And does it make more sense to have a trust company or a third party company act as that trustee, more so than a family member? And again, and I've said this in prior shows, just because you're the next of kin doesn't necessarily mean you will be that person's trustee. you will be in charge. Selecting the trustee is one of the most important decisions that you can make. Because if you appoint somebody who doesn't follow the rules, doesn't care to follow the rules, doesn't care to do the research behind the different special needs laws in Pennsylvania, it can result in the loss of those benefits. And even worse, it could cause an overpayment of benefits, meaning that you have to pay it back and lose those future payments. Picking the trustee, you have to consider certain things like age, their own disability, the source and the amount of money that these funds will be coming from, and then the availability of the family support. So depending on the circumstances, those involved, you know, it's pretty cut and dry. If that special needs beneficiary doesn't have anybody, then obviously we need to go outside of that family realm. It definitely gets more complicated when we have family, but maybe they don't have that person's best interest at heart. So we can seek a corporate fiduciary, and that can be a bank, a trust company. It could be an individual who owns their own trustee company. If the person who receives, let's use the personal injury settlement, let's say that they're receiving a settlement and they're a minor, then a corporate fiduciary may make the most sense. But keep in mind, if we use a corporate fiduciary, it gets expensive. It depends on what their fee schedule is. Are they going to charge you a fee even if they don't do anything on a monthly basis? What's the startup cost? What's the transfer fee? Those are things we have to consider. You also have to consider, if you have a non-individual act as your trustee, will they only perform so many transactions for you on a monthly basis? And what's the cost if they exceed that number? So will they only write 10 checks for you a month? Pay 10 bills a month? Speak to or pay bills. Speak to a doctor or pay bills. Totaling 10 times a month. So these are things that people don't necessarily think about. But acting in this role is a business. It is a job. So you have to think of it that way. But we have to make the best decision when it comes down to the amount of assets involved. We don't want to deplete the special needs beneficiary's trust for trustee fees. We need to definitely look at the overall picture and see what makes the most sense. In the circumstance where an individual is involved, you must keep in mind that the person who you select or who is selected will manage that trust as though it was their own. They have to follow the law. They have to make appropriate distributions to the disabled beneficiary. They also have to maintain accurate records so that we can report back to the court or the governmental agency when necessary. Especially if a trust is terminated or transferred to a new trustee. These are things we must consider. So if you want to appoint Patty, but Patty can't balance her own checkbook, then maybe we shouldn't trust her with the settlement in the trust. Those are just some things to consider. With any involvement of a trust, I'm asked, is the trust a loophole? Is there something that's going to come back and bite us later on down the road because we used a trust? For special needs trusts, Congress actually made the determination that they were authorized and to be used so that a disabled individual could maintain the benefits they receive and have access to additional funds to pay for their supplemental needs and a more desirable quality of life. So the trust has to meet basic requirements to qualify under the law. Each state has different specifics that we have to make sure that trust encompasses. So Pennsylvania, we have different requirements. We need to make sure it's written in such a way it only benefits that special needs beneficiary. The court is informed. So for instance, if that individual is receiving Medicaid, then the Department of Human Services must approve the trust, right? And then it has to stay on file with the depository. There's a lot of rules that are involved that may not be known or considered. The other thing to know is that with any of these first party trusts, and I made mention of this before, is that the state has the first lien on the remainder of that trust, the residue, if you will, once that person dies. So let's say Johnny received a $1 million settlement, and that's what was in his trust during his lifetime. During his lifetime, obviously, he had to live, pay additional bills. Maybe there's medical costs that were unforeseen, what have you. And during his lifetime, over the next 40, 50, 60 years, that $1 million trust was depleted down to $200,000. So now Johnny passes away with a $200,000 balance in his trust. Good planning would list beneficiaries of that money when he dies, keeping in mind that the state of Pennsylvania is the first lien holder on that money. So depending on how much he received in benefits during his lifetime, in this case for medical assistance, let's say, maybe he owes them $1 million. Well, then the contingent beneficiaries won't receive or may not receive an inheritance at all. Maybe all that money goes to the state. Let's say Johnny dies, there's $200,000 in that trust, and he owes Pennsylvania $50,000. Well, then upon his passing, Medicaid would be reimbursed, that $50,000, and then the remaining money, $150,000, would pass to the beneficiaries named in his trust. If no beneficiary was named in his trust, then just like any other estate plan, that money will then become probatable and go into Johnny's estate. Any creditor of Johnny's estate has 1 year from the date that executor is sworn in to file a claim against the estate. So now Pennsylvania has been repaid their Medicaid monies. But let's say Johnny has other medical debt. He owes an ambulance bill, hospital bill, doctor's bills. Maybe he had a credit card bill. Now that that estate has been opened up, creditors have 1 year to file claim. Because let's face it, if you have debt when you die, those creditors get reimbursed or get paid back that loan amount. So those are some things to think about. Now, I know we didn't talk a lot about the third party trust, but that's your other type of trust. That's the vehicle we use when, let's say, mom and dad are leaving Johnny money. They don't want it to go into his estate. They don't want him to be disqualified from benefits. They don't want Pennsylvania to take all of that. They want it to be set aside for him. And then if he doesn't use it or need it or predeceases them, it goes to the beneficiaries of their choosing. So let's make this simple. Let's say I have two kids, Joey and Susie. Joey has special needs. When I die, I leave 50% to Susie, 50% to Joey. although Joey's share won't go to him outright and in his name. It'll go into this third-party trust for his benefit. This will protect Joey's resources. So the benefits he receives, this will protect this money from going to pay that back and allow him to continue to receive these benefits while also enjoying the financial security that I worked so hard for. Now, let's say Joey passes away with a balance in his third-party trust, meaning my money that I left him when I died. I then have the ability during my planning to name Susie as the backup beneficiary. So if Johnny dies and he has money in there, it goes automatically to Susie. Or I can say it goes to a charity, or it goes to Johnny's kids, or it goes to whomever I want it to go to. But the important thing being, the court doesn't need to get involved, and it's not accountable resource that the state of Pennsylvania can come back and file a claim on. We want to make sure that we design a comprehensive estate plan for everybody, no matter the level of their assets. We want to make sure that the techniques we use are sophisticated. We want to make sure that beneficiaries who have special needs continue to receive their benefits. We want to make sure that the inheritance tax is minimized. We want to protect the kids who are minors. Let's say you have a blended family. We want to make sure those people who you want to receive do, in fact, receive what you want them to get. Overall, the goal is to make sure that this process is as simple as possible. Now, I know that this show we're dedicating to planning for special needs beneficiaries. And of course, we assist our clients in all stages of public benefit and special needs planning. That means we'll help you qualify for a public benefit, appeal if you're denied, create that estate plan to protect Johnny's benefits that he's receiving, and then ultimately determine whether or not guardianship or a less restricted option is appropriate. Those are our overall goals when it comes to special needs planning. And again, special needs planning doesn't just mean for a child who has some form of intellectual disability. We do special needs planning for spouses who have a form of dementia and whom we know that if mom dies, dad's going to end up needing to qualify, or maybe he already does qualify for Medicaid. We consider that special needs planning, so we'll make sure that the inheritance that dad would receive when mom died doesn't disqualify him from benefits. Isn't that the most important thing? We want to make sure their life is not disrupted. They continue to receive what they are legally entitled to receive, and ultimately keep them as happy as possible until they pass away. That's what's important to us. That's what's important to you. That's what's important to our clients. We just want to make sure all the I's are dotted, T's are crossed. We're doing what it makes sense, what the court allows us to do. So the last thing before we wrap up our show, Polly asked me, do we, and in her case, we were talking about personal injury settlements, do we allow that settlement to come into the special needs individual's name first and then create the trust? And my immediate reaction was absolutely not. We need to be proactive, especially when it comes to benefits and potential loss of benefits, disqualification. We want to make sure we have that trust created beforehand, even before the settlement structure comes in. So that personal injury attorney, and that's their job, to make sure you get as much as you deserve and are entitled to. Our job is to make sure the language is appropriate. They may not have any idea about a special needs trust or the language that should be in that trust. So my answer to her was, let's make sure that trust is created prior. Everything is already lined up so that when that settlement comes in, nothing is disrupted, especially those benefits. That's the most important thing. And that brings us to the end of our show. So if you're like Polly or you have any questions, feel free. Give us a call, 724-784-0239. And again, our website is contilawpgh.com. Have a great weekend, everybody. I'll see you next time. God bless.